Good morning. Prohibiting employers from requesting or requiring employees or potential employees for their passwords and usernames is at the heart of a bill on tap today, but there's a nuance that's not being lost on the Civil Rights Commission. We'll talk with the executive director, Bill Hoshijo. And next week, NOAA plans to live stream the discoveries of a remotely operated underwater vehicle exploring the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument. We'll talk with lead scientist Daniel Wagner later this hour.
And I'm Chris Vandergrift. McConaughey's with us to talk about his new song and video, The Fire Is Ours. And the Maui Pops Orchestra is preparing its weekend Winter Fantasy Pops concert. We'll get a preview from music director Jim Durham.
It's an Aloha Friday, February 19th. The conversation starts after this news. Good morning and welcome to an Aloha Friday on The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Beth Ann. We're hearing more and more about privacy issues as more and more ways are come up with to invade our privacy, right?
Or potentially invade privacy, especially in the workplace, and that's the subject of our first conversation. Now, today, the House Judiciary Committee is taking up whether your employer should be prohibited from asking for passwords and usernames for your personal accounts. The bill could also apply to prospective employees, and there are some restrictions in the bill. And although most of the testimony is in support, the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission Executive Director Bill Hoshijo says that their support comes with a caveat.
Employers have an obligation under both state and federal law to investigate and take corrective action when there are employee complaints of discriminatory harassment, whether it's sexual harassment, racial harassment, harassment based on ancestry, religion, sexual orientation, et cetera, et cetera. And we were concerned that in this day and age, we do see complaints of harassment that's conducted in part over social media. We want to be sure that nothing in the new law, if it's enacted, diminishes or excuses an employer from their responsibility to investigate.
So if an employee comes to an employer and says, so-and-so is responsible for bullying me online, or I'm being harassed by so-and-so, and you know, here's the proof of it, that the employer would have to take action on that. Someone might ask, well, does that mean that they have to have the password to a person's personal account to be able to do that? Or do they go to the potentially offending employee and say, you have to take that down?
I think an internal investigation might have to include both, you know, in terms of having access to see the offending posting. And then also the corrective action might include taking it down. A couple of things I should probably clarify, and one is that our concern in terms of enforcement is not on bullying in general, but it's on discriminatory harassment. So sort of bad boss, abusive behavior that's non-discriminatory doesn't really fall under our purview.
But if there's a racial epithet or other slur, that would be.
Yes, and sexual harassment, hostile environment could include things like spreading rumors, or could be physical or could be verbal, could be online. A lot of times people, they think that sexual harassment in the workplace covers only things that happen in the workplace, but it could be an employee stalking another employee or a manager stalking an employee. So it could involve things happening outside of the physical workplace.
Given the fact that in this last week, we've been also hearing a lot about the issue of Apple and not being amenable to breaking open the iPhone that belonged to the San Bernardino terrorist. Is that kind of argument helping to redefine what privacy is all about, or is it thwarting it in some ways, or at least thwarting personal and domestic security?
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting because it kind of goes to another one of our concerns, is that the bill, the proposed legislation, addresses issues and problems that are bigger and way beyond our defined jurisdiction, which is basically employment discrimination in this case. And we do have concerns about enforcement of this new protection being placed under our jurisdiction, because it's really unlike the other protections that are in the laws that we enforce, protections against racial discrimination, religion-based, ancestry-based, sex-based. We're actually urging the legislature to consider putting the protection in a part of the statutes that doesn't fall under our jurisdiction and having them provide a direct cause of action so that people can get right into court if they feel their rights under the new law are being violated.
So where should that be, Bill?
Because it focuses on employment, it could go in Chapter 378. We enforce Chapter 378, Part 1, but not the other parts. So, you know, there are other protections in the employment setting that are in our employment law but aren't Fair Employment, Chapter 378, Part 1, that the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission enforces. So, you know, some examples might be whistleblower protections or various forms, lie detector test protections. And it is, I mean, we recognize that there is a privacy interest at stake here, and that's why we support the intent of the bill. And with that support, we're just pointing out our specific concerns about how it affects employers' obligations. So that's really the basis for our position.
Bill Hoshijo, if they don't see eye to eye with moving it into Chapter 378, would you still continue to support this bill?
You know, this bill, I believe, went to conference in a different form last year, and we did continue to support the intent of the bill, urging the conference committee consider our recommendation, suggestion that it put in another part. So, you know, I think we'll continue with that and support and pointing out our concerns.
And finally, before we leave you, as you look at privacy in the year 2016, privacy in all of its shades and nuance, what do you see this year that may look any different than last year, not just because of the issue with Apple and trying to break open the phone for the FBI being roundly denounced?
You know, one of the things that we see is that information is so readily available with various database search engines. And I think for workers, and especially young workers who are really social media savvy, they really need to be aware that once they put something online, that even if they delete it, that could still be out there. So they should be cautious and think about what they post, and I guess just be mindful that prospective employer years down the line could wind up seeing something that they're posting now.
We seem to think that we've made that message a lot and that it's been repeated a lot, but clearly given some of the things that still show up in social media, some people aren't paying attention or maybe just getting into it and understanding that it has ramifications. Is there something that you think that just as a society in general that we need to do to better understand what privacy means and doesn't mean now?
You know, I guess people talk about the right to privacy, and, you know, there's in the U.S. Constitution, at least, there's no actual express right to privacy. It's really sort of cobbled together based on other rights. And so I think you're right in the sense that what we consider protected privacy interests, it does change over time. And we're seeing the effect of different kinds of issues that arise, you know, whether it's identity theft or health information. People are a lot more sensitive about what kinds of information is out there in today's world. I think that's a good thing.
And in part leading technological giants to create devices that only the owner can unlock.
Yeah, with data management and all these other security innovations and developments. Yeah.
Which kind of brings us right back to HB 1739 and what will happen with it. There's a hearing later today. We'll see if this continues to move. Thank you so much for the time this morning.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
Bill Hoshijo played an active role in the support of the legislation which established the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission. In 1995, he was appointed to serve as a commissioner, and 2 years later was appointed executive director, a post he continues to hold. HB 1739, the bill to prohibit an employer from asking for an employee's access information for personal accounts, will be heard this afternoon. You can find a link to the bill on our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2. It's 8:14, and coming up in the show, Makana looks at the runaway success of his Fire Is Ours video. First, your quiz.
In our backyard quiz today, it's already baseball season. Alexander Joy Cartwright Jr. was one of the few individuals who has come to be known as a father of baseball. Cartwright earned his unofficial title after making several important contributions to the sport. For one, he developed what's known as the Knickerbocker Rules. They're the foundation for the rules of modern baseball, and although historians dispute some of his contributions to the sport, Cartwright was officially declared the inventor of the modern game by the 83rd U.S. Congress on June 3, 1953. Now, almost a century before that, in 1849, Cartwright relocated to Hawaii and served as the chief of the Honolulu Fire Department from about 1850 to 1863. During his years in Hawaii, Cartwright set up a baseball diamond and park bearing his own name, and to this day, it's still used by little leaguers and baseball enthusiasts alike. For today's backyard quiz, we'd like you to tell us where in Hawaii you can find Cartwright Field. We'll accept the name of the general area or the name of the cross street where the field is located. We're feeling generous today. Call us at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. And as always, the first one to get it right will get the HBR t-shirt.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Noheya Gallery and Kaiser Permanente.
Love of power is a puppet string, but can't control the love we bring. The fire is out, the hour is now, the tide is set to turn.
Every social movement needs a song, and Makana has created one for the youth groundswell that seems to be accompanying the Bernie Sanders campaign. His song, The Fire Is Ours, with its ambitious self-produced video, has been seen by hundreds of thousands in just a few days. Makana is no stranger to social advocacy, or to the way music can inspire large numbers of people, and he's with us in our studio. Good morning, Makana.
Good morning, Chris.
I'm sure there are those who see this as a departure for you, but it's not at all, is it?
It is not. Yeah, as those who follow my music may know, I don't look at music genre specific. I look at it as a language of emotion and sentiment.
Fair enough. And I'm thinking of, you know, this got picked up among others, Fox News. And when you were interviewed on that station, I think they were expecting a sort of a harmless you know, a surfer dude from Hawaii, not somebody who's able to articulate a political message.
The beauty of this project for me goes beyond the music video, because the music video was more than an endorsement of Bernie Sanders, a remix of mainstream media. three quarters of the video, there's no mention of Bernie.
Yeah.
It's not a big propaganda for him. What it is really I'm Photoshopped or composited into the State of the Union address, into
right.
debates, into mainstream news. And we've actually taken and replaced mainstream news headlines mm-hmm. with more relevant headlines. And the whole thing is a commentary on how mainstream media distracts and divides. And so when I was invited to go on Fox, it was an amazing experience. And you can see that interview online because they started to do the exact thing that I was criticizing in the video. And I was able to call them out on it on Fox News Live national TV.
Which was,
well, Makana, tell us, what inspired you to do this music video? And I said, well, really, what inspired me was really my disgust for the way mainstream media does this and that. And it's really funny. It's actually the not only the video, but the Fox News clip is going viral on the internet. And people on the left and the right are shocked when they watch it. But there were so many things that the interviewers were asking me that I thought were so odd. Like, you know, well, you're from Hawaii. Why would you care? And you're a young guy. What do you want besides free college? And, it, you know, there's this kind of divide and conquer.
Why do you hate America?
Yeah. Why do you care? You're a young guy. Why should you care? And reinforcing that kind of stuff is why I made the music video, to fight that, to say, hey, you know, those stereotypes work against the democratic process.
And that whole patronizing attitude, I think that your video is a reaction to that. Your video and your song are a reaction to that, in the sense that what you portray yourself in the video as somebody who has kind of inserted himself into this area that has excluded him.
Yes, exactly. And so when we talk about free speech, we talk about the democratic process, of course, after Citizens United, money was made speech and corporations were made into people.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's great that we can all say what we want, but we've almost been reduced to like Facebook comments and YouTube comments. That's not a real democracy. So as an artist, what I try to do is level the playing field. I don't have huge money to throw at the process, but I have art.
Well, by making a statement that's a clear statement, you don't need a lot of window dressing around it. If your message is that clear, there's a line in your song that I really liked. We want to, and this is that whole youth alienation theme. We want to salvage the remains of a dream worth defending.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? One of the things I think that happens with the youth vote, the youth population in an election, is that it does get marginalized and seen as a sort of a disaffected group that doesn't believe that there's something worth defending.
Well, the most amazing thing about what's happening with Bernie is, and to be clear for you know, my perspective, is that Bernie represents something that's been going on for a long time. You know, there's a populist, disenfranchised kind of emotion that's penetrated the world, really, but in the nation specifically. And so, you know, we saw that rise and get really big with Occupy Wall Street. And what we're seeing now is, you know, even with the rise of Trump, we're seeing people that are just sick and tired of typical politics. And so I think, you know, it's important to understand that, you know, when you see a lot of the arguments that, and I've seen this in the past week with following the comments and both the praise and the criticism is really interesting because it's revealed a sense of a lack of understanding of economic systems mm-hmm. in America and a lot of mythologies. So when you talk about marginalizing people, I think what the mainstream media does is it tries to say, okay, well, hey, you know, like what they said on Fox, well, you already have your nominee, you know, Clinton. Why would you even bother doing this? Why don't you write an anthem for her? And my response was, well, that's exactly my point. When you say things like that, you're fueling this personality-driven division politics. And young people don't look at things in terms of age, gender, race. We're not programmed into a party system. So what we're looking at is who's funding this candidate? Like with Bernie, his funding's not coming from major corporations and banks and super PACs. It's coming from individuals and unionized workers. That's big for people. You know, the fact that he wants to take on the big banks. So it's more than just the mythology of free stuff. It's the disgust with a democracy that's turned into a plutocracy and a corporate oligarchy.
the opening shot of the video has you going into a voting booth, and then your selections, when you look at your ballot, are not people, they're corporations.
Yes. Yeah, we actually designed that and printed up the ballot. The video, what we tried to do was made in two parts. There was the compositing into the news footage, which was, of course, all fake, but very realistic looking. But it was juxtaposed against a very cinematic view of the snowy, icy desert in Utah with an actual piano on fire.
Looked like a shot out of The Revenant. I expected a bear to come out.
Thank you. That's a great compliment. A lot of people have, unfortunately, thought it was CGI. And when you watch it, just keep in mind that those scenes of me playing the piano have zero effects. They are absolutely authentic.
Well, I bet it was fun making that thing, yeah?
It was a rush. I mean, just getting the piano out there was a challenge I've never faced. But then, lighting it, not setting myself on fire, having it burn perfectly. What was really awesome was it was so freezing out there. And I was in a T-shirt for hours.
Yeah.
And when I finally lit the piano, of course, I'm running. And you only have about 8 minutes before it just gets too hot. And steam starts coming through the keys, but you see in the video all the steam rising through the keys.
Yeah, it's a great shot. Makana, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
You bet. Good talking to you. Makana's new song, Fire Is Ours, can be seen and heard online at our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
And I feel the burn for the truth to come.
Public radio is people. Our staff here in Hawaii, our broadcast colleagues across the nation and the world, our more than 200 program sponsors, and our approximately 13,000 members. Thank you to this group of individuals whose donations provide for 65% of our annual budget. Please join us in thanking Joe Kim of Honolulu, John Lakatos, and Patricia Harrell Lakatos of Kailua, and Katie Doyle Hummel of Kaneohe. As a listener, you're our kind of people too. Let's hear from you in support of Hawaii Public Radio. An easy online membership form is at hawaiipublicradio.org. And thanks.
Support for The Conversation comes from the College of Business at Hawaii Pacific University, whose MBA FlexPlus program offers a blend of classroom and online classes to fit the lives of working professionals. hpu.edu/business.
Was saying no to NextEra's bid for huge rate hike at Florida's Power and Light the reason that certain regulators soon found themselves out of a job? Could be, according to Civil Beat. Reporter Chad Blair joins us now with a reality check. Good morning.
Good morning, Bethann.
This is a potentially scary thought for people who believe that they can say no and not have ramifications. But from what you found in Florida, what happened with these regulators who said no to NextEra?
I would describe Eric Pape's story as a cautionary tale about the power and influence of NextEra Energy, particularly as it comes to their desire to purchase Hawaiian Electric here. And, of course, that's being deliberated before our own set of regulators. So a quick summary. 6 years ago, a subsidiary of the company, Florida Power and Light, they wanted a big rate increase. They had to go before the state. They wanted to use the money for a $16 billion investment in technology and in construction. Well, they got turned down. Nearly the entire request was rejected. A much smaller rate was allowed. By the end of the year, 4 out of 5 of the regulators had lost their jobs. They were then replaced by commissioners far more favorably disposed to influential utility companies like NextEra. The lesson seems to be that if you do not give this company what it wants, they are going to get rid of you. And that's what Eric is hearing from people that he spoke with in Florida, as well as the media coverage of the rate increase and the fallout in Florida.
Chad, was there actually a campaign to unseat these regulators that was identified, or was this sort of just the de facto result and possibly backdoor trading and things that happened that we don't really know about?
Florida media reported that there was a smear campaign. Eric talked to some of the people that describe some of the very regulators involved here, what happened. It included things like listening to their correspondence and leaking it, doing background checks, criminal property credit. I can tell you that Florida Power and Light denies that there were any secret tactics involved, but when you read Eric's story, you certainly come away with the idea, or at least the strong suggestion, that these people were having their character destroyed. Part of the story also looks at the power of NextEra, the power of Florida Power and Light, giving millions, I mean tens of millions of dollars in contributions coming not only from the company but from lobbying too. The basic contention is that Florida Power and Light owns the legislature in Florida, which, by the way, is a Republican-controlled legislature.
And as you mentioned going into this, that this seems to be a cautionary tale for our own PUC. Is there enough to suggest that they should be warned?
Well, NextEra wouldn't comment directly on what happened in Florida, given the PUC hearing is ongoing. But the Florida situation did come up because of testimony. One of those former regulators actually flew out here and testified. And you could tell, at least from Eric's point of view in the story, still some bad blood between the two. Let's say that. The strong implication is don't trust NextEra.
All right. We're going to leave it at that point. We'll talk to you on Monday. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Beth Ann.
Chad Blair reports for Civil Beat.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributor Oceanside Hawaii Assisted Living and Memory Care.
On Friday, we do a preview of coming attractions from our news department. And to help us out with that, News Director Bill Dorman joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
So we've got the legislature that's going to go into a recess.
It is that time of year. You know, today actually is the first deadline on the legislative calendar. Any bill that needs to be referred to more than one committee has to make it to its final committee by today. So if you're keeping score at home, this is called the first lateral. It's part of that winnowing process to narrow down the proposed legislation. So at this point, if an idea has stalled and needs to be heard by more than one committee, that's it for the session if it's not there today. Next Thursday, as you mentioned, is the mandatory five-day recess for the State House and Senate. Committee hearings, though, go on. A lot of work goes on in the meanwhile. And as that goes on, just a quick plug for our friends over at the Public Access Room at the Capitol. If you have any questions about the mechanics of the session, you want some help in tracking down particular issues or legislation, staff's very helpful. They can point you to a lot of resources, both online, offline. It's nonpartisan, it's non-denominational, it's free. We read their newsletter in the newsroom, and the latest one just came out yesterday, so that reminded me to
and that's
remind
a good tip
our listeners.
Because we've talked to them every year, too, usually, but they've had a change of staff and a change of leadership this year with the retirement of their former head. And, it's a great place to go if you haven't been there. And you can also get on their list and get the newsletter, too.
Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, so our own plans of covering the legislature, we'll see what develops. Some bills about introducing possible helmet law for motorcycle riders, tighter moped inspections, exempting public school teachers from accepting free airline tickets for tours and school trips. Of course, a lot of these have been going on for quite some time as issues, and looks like they're going to be making some legislative progress next week.
So much of what we see turned up in the ledge is pulled right from the news.
Exactly, exactly.
And we're going to have a visitor next week from Washington, aren't we?
Yeah, so the chair of the National Endowment for the Arts is here in the islands, Jane Chu. She spent some time on Maui this week, and she'll be visiting Kalihi Kai Elementary School on Monday. And this is part of the Turnaround Arts Hawaii. This is a program the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities using arts education as a tool to help turn around low-performing schools and increasing the engagement level of students. So she's going to be visiting classrooms there to see how the arts are being integrated into the broader education. And Noe Tanigawa is going to be talking to her about her perspectives on arts education in the islands, but also with an eye to a comparative look to see, in terms of other states, what they are doing, possible lessons that we can learn in Hawaii. And Jane Chu is an interesting person herself. She's the daughter of Chinese immigrants, studied piano from a young age, and went on, in terms of education, has an MS in music and in teaching piano, also an MBA, a PhD in philanthropic studies. So really a wide set of education and experiences that it'll be interesting to see what she makes of our situation here in Hawaii.
I think that would call her extremely well-rounded.
Yes, absolutely.
With a broad breadth of interests. And we'll see what she sees in us. And a lot of teachers might be saying, well, good luck. But we're going to see what comes out of that. We'll be interested to hear that report from Noe. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Bill Dorman is HPR's news director, and he joins us every week for a preview of what's coming out of our news department. On a Friday, we also check our email bag for some of your responses to what you've heard on the show. And this email came following Wednesday's tax bill conversation with Tom Yamachiga of the Hawaii Tax Foundation.
Hi, Beth Ann. Talks on 0.5% tax added to GET for seniors to hire in home help. Ros Baker is going after the wrong pot of money, exploiting human emotions. Today's guest said it so well. We have a history of inefficient management of program money. It needs to come from the federal Social Security and our Medicare funds. It's a national problem, and you have some seniors paying double tax on their Social Security if they are married, work, or have retirement or investment income. They have a voice in how their duplication is spent. They would be more than happy to have it go to themselves. Thanks for listening. Deborah Coleman, Wailuku, Maui.
You can always respond to any of the segments that you hear on our program or anything you have to say about the station. Probably the best way to do it is in your own voice on our talkback line. That's 808-792-8217. Or if you like email, yeah, we've got that too. It's talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. It's large, it's remote, it's protected, and chances are you might never ever see the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. An expedition starting next week will give you a chance, though, to view in real time what researchers are discovering as a remotely operated underwater vehicle goes looking for adventure. Daniel Wagner is again the lead scientist for this journey of the NOAA ship Okeanos Explorer. He joins us now in our studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Thank you so much for having me.
Has this been the adventure of your lifetime?
Yeah, so it's an absolutely wonderful project. Last summer, we actually sailed on the Okeanos Explorer up to the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, and it was an extremely unbelievable adventure. And we're going back this next Tuesday on a three-week mission up there, and it's going to be very exciting, and especially because, as you mentioned, everyone can follow along in real time, watch the videos, and it's wonderful that people can share on the excitement.
It also is going to be a little bit bittersweet, isn't it? Because this is the last voyage into that particular area.
So, yeah, the Okeanos Explorer has been or is currently here in Hawaii, and it's focusing on the U.S. Pacific for the next 3 years. As I mentioned, this is the second expedition to Papahanaumokuakea, and then it's going to move on to other places in the U.S. Pacific.
When you're gone over these next 3 weeks, starting next Tuesday, what specifically for you will be something that you'll tout as being the big win of this voyage, as opposed to a lot of the video and a lot of the discovery that we saw from last year?
So we are looking for things, for new things, basically, and as you mentioned, Papahanaumokuakea is so big, and the largest portion of the monument is actually in very deep waters. So we are going to go to places that we've never been before, and so chances are we're going to find new things. Last year, in those 3 weeks, we came back with 35 specimens, all of which represented new species or new species records for the region. And I guarantee that the same thing is going to be true this year. Again, the biggest excitement is that everyone can follow along in real time, and it's just very exciting that people can share in the excitement.
And, of course, we'll have links to all that on our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation. But this is also to say that there is so much exploration that can be done and continues to be done underwater, although most people sort of have maybe they're a little bit more circumspect about how that would impact their own lives. But the fact that there's so much yet to explore certainly excites you.
Yes, and that's a very good point is, you know, most people know that the biggest portion of the planet is underwater, but the biggest portion is actually in very deep water and places that haven't even been mapped. Over 95% of the ocean is not mapped, and we very rudimentary information of how does the seafloor look like we don't have for much of the planet, and in especially places that are of cultural and biological significance like Papahanaumokuakea, we're still trying to get some baseline information.
Having just said that, Daniel, why is it that so many people seemingly discount discoveries under the water, and particularly in deep water, where most of that comes out more in the form of science fiction?
Well, a lot of it is because the resources to go explore and do these things are limited. We don't get to do it at the rate that we hope for because there is so much, you know, uncharted terrain still, and there's these kind of snapshot views that we get at this terrain. And yeah, most people are just not aware of how much of our planet still needs to be surveyed and explored.
What would counter that? The idea that, you know, people just don't really know how much is there. Do we not do a really good job of talking about those ideas?
Oh, yeah, and that's a good point. And we all need to make a better better effort at trying to educate the general public and people that might not be scientists or explorers or in this realm of, you know, how much we still have to be discovered and explored.
Which is kind of the point of being able to stream it in real time. And see what you're seeing as you're seeing it.
Exactly, yeah. And I do want to put out a plug here, so you can either just Google Okeanos Explorer or follow them on oceanexplorer.noaa.gov. There's a tab there for live video, and around the clock, you can tune in and watch exactly what's happening on the ship. So when the remotely operated vehicle is in the water, you'll be following the video as we see it on the ship, and then in the times when the ROV is not in the water, you can see what the scientists are doing when they're processing samples. So it's a really neat tool for people to get a little bit of a sense of what it is like to go out to sea and do these discovery missions.
And virtually be with you in ways that in reality, they likely won't be able to.
Yeah, and it's just, I'm just fascinated with the technology. We'll be going up north of Midway Atoll, which is over 2,000 miles away here from Honolulu. We'll be diving in some cases 3 miles deep, and you can actually watch the video just with a couple seconds of delay of, you know, something that's 2,000 miles and 3 miles deep away. It's really unbelievable.
And pretty amazing that we have that capability. Now, are you also going to be accepting comments and so people can be in contact with you?
So there are a couple ways that people can follow on. Of course, they can watch the video. Every time we do these missions, we set one day of the expeditions where people can ask questions to the scientists. This is going to be March 3rd. There's going to be a link on that website that I just mentioned, oceanexplorer.noaa.gov, where anyone can ask anything of the scientists, the pilots, the engineers, the crew of the ship. And during that day, we all take some time out of our day to answer the questions the public might have.
Well, that's good information and a lot of fun, too. And thank you very much for giving us a preview. And have a very, very safe journey and one full of discoveries that makes a lot of memories for you, too.
Thank you so much, Beth Ann.
Daniel Wagner is once again the lead scientist when the NOAA ship Okeanos Explorer leads the expedition to the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. It starts next week. And as we were talking about, Noah will be live streaming the Papahānaumokuakea Marine National Monument exploration. For more information, take a look at our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Straub Clinic and Hospital and Gourmet Events Hawaii.
In this morning's backyard quiz, we thought about Alexander Joy Cartwright Jr. His contributions to the sport of baseball are many. He was one of only a few who've come to be known as the father of baseball. He earned this unofficial title in part for developing what are known as the Knickerbocker rules. They're important because they're considered a foundation of the modern game. And in 1849, Cartwright relocated to Hawaii, became chief of the Honolulu Fire Department. During his years in Hawaii, he set up a baseball diamond and park bearing his own name, and to this day it's used by community baseball players, young and old. For today's backyard quiz, we wanted you to tell us where in Hawaii Cartwright Field is located. The answer, of course, is Makiki on the island of Oahu.
Dennis Quinn called us from Honolulu and knew that answer. Frankly, so did a lot of people. We were told the phones just blew up with answers. Oh, they're still intact, those phones. Won't be the subject of another part of our pledge drive needs. But yes, lots of people knew that answer, and a place where many have come to enjoy over the years. It's now 8:48. That's the answer to today's quiz. If you've got a quiz for us, you can always send it in to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
The director of a pops orchestra has a two-part goal: to make orchestral music accessible to a wide audience by performing familiar works, and to find ways to breathe renewed life into those familiar and oft-performed pieces. James Durham, music director of the Maui Pops Orchestra, has faced that challenge many times before. This Sunday, he and his orchestra will add another challenge, supporting a visiting soloist, violin virtuoso Benjamin Baker. Jim's on the phone with us now. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Been getting the show together with the orchestra?
We have. It's really fun for me on this program because of my classical background to enjoy some of the great classics to present to the audience that are very familiar to them, and also then to explore some works with our guest artists that probably aren't quite so familiar.
Well, you know, Jim, sometimes when a piece is very familiar, you can sort of overlook aspects of it. And we just played that clip from the William Tell Orchestra, and I was listening to the violin part thinking, that's going to be hard to play.
It is difficult. And you know the old joke about the violinist whose fingers are like lightning may never strike the same place twice. We're working hard to get our fingers to strike the same place twice.
I would imagine, and in tandem, no less, right?
Yeah, at the same time with our colleagues around us. Yes.
Yeah, that's. I've always thought that was one of the trickier aspects of music. But another that's a challenge for you folks is incorporating the work of a visiting soloist, right?
Yes, a difficulty for that for us here on Maui is that we only get one full rehearsal in the Maui Arts and Cultural Center. Mm-hmm. We do bring some off-island players, and our guest artists that come in, we just get one full rehearsal on Sunday morning prior to the Sunday afternoon concert. So that presents a challenge right there.
What are the things that you need to resolve at that rehearsal?
Well, first and foremost, the problem is just getting everybody comfortable sitting together and playing together at one time when we basically only get to run through each piece once.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get a chance to delve into a lot of details. And it's part of the issues with being a community orchestra. We do have a limited budget, and of course, bringing in guests from off island. In this case, Benjamin Baker coming from Britain.
Yeah.
And he, you know, arrived here at 10 o'clock last night, and I'll get a chance to go over the music with him once, and then it. However, we've gotten pretty good at it. We know what we have to do, and we get in there and we watch the clock, and sometimes we're a matter of seconds at the end of the rehearsal, but we get the job done.
Well, at least the whole performance is fresh when you do it, right?
It's very fresh, yes. You know, our audience on Maui knows that our orchestra is a smaller orchestra, has limitations. They don't expect the New York Philharmonic on the stage, and they're very appreciative of our efforts.
But, you know, one of the things, Jim, about a smaller orchestra, to me, as with a chamber orchestra, is you can really appreciate the sonority of the of individual instruments, maybe even a little more than if they're massed in you know, numbers of 50 or 60 players.
Well, that's true, and that also has to do with the type of music that you're performing. Most of the music we do is generally can be played comfortably by a you know, medium-sized orchestra. Mm-hmm. We don't have 90 people on the stage, so we have to avoid the grandiose works.
Yeah, sure. I would think where you have to have six timpani lined up and all that kind of thing. But also with a soloist, Jim, you've got to really address the dynamics of your orchestra, don't you, to make sure that that violin comes through when it's supposed to.
Yes, that's always a challenge. When we practice the accompaniment, of course, the soloist isn't there. And so we have to be careful to remember that the soloist needs to always come out and to stay underneath. And if you hear any orchestra anywhere in the world with any soloist, it's very common to have the orchestra from time to time cover the soloist. And that often has to do with the way the accompaniment is written. Sometimes the accompaniments are a little heavy.
Sure.
And so it's always a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I would think so. And these are virtuoso pieces that he's going to be playing, right?
Yes, they are specifically pieces that are designed to show off your technique as an instrumentalist. The Chanson Poème is one of the lesser known works for the violin, but again, one of the works that's been recorded by every major artist, you know, in the last 100 years. It is well known to those who are very familiar with the violin repertoire. The Faust Fantasy is a work which is basically a gymnastic work for the violin, and it is a piece that's played in various competitions, a Wieniawski competition. It's required that piece is played there. So it's well known among artists. Not so well known among the general audience, partially because, you know, in the last decades, they like to program the giant concerto works, and these are like 16-minute single movement pieces that I think are appropriate for our audience here.
It really generates these virtuoso pieces for violin. For one thing, it's incredible what you can do on a violin, but they really generate a lot of excitement, don't they, Jim?
Well, that's our goal, and part of my goal as a music director in developing the program, I feel compelled to put something in each program that's new for the listener. I know our listeners here on Maui particularly enjoy things that are familiar to them. But, you know, I feel like we need to present something each time that's maybe new.
Yeah, and it really looks like a rounded program. Thanks very much for taking the time to talk with us. And
well, I appreciate it so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, have a great concert, Jim. Thanks for doing it. Jim Durham, James Durham, is the music director of the Maui Pops Orchestra, which will present its Winter Fantasy Pops Concert Sunday at 3 p.m. in the Maui Arts and Cultural Center's Castle Theater in Kahului. The guest artist is British violinist Benjamin Baker.
I'm David Remnick. Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, I'll talk with DeRay McKesson, the Black Lives Matter activist who's now running for mayor of Baltimore. And we'll hear from Maria Bamford about mental illness and comedy.
They asked me if I'd like to be on the cover of Bipolar magazine, and I said, yes, I would.
That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
This evening at 7, following Left, Right, and Center.
This morning I enjoyed listening to Makana and you talk about his video and just how he was treated when he was on Fox News, what the expectations he thought were of him, and how he responded.
Well, as I said to him before the show, and he agreed with me, he said, it looked as if they really didn't take you very seriously, and he was able to kind of turn that to his advantage, because I don't think they expected trenchant political commentary from this young musician from Hawaii, but that's what they got. And he made a reference in our discussion on the air to the fact that there are a lot of disaffected voters that in a way that voters at fringes on the right and the left have a great deal in common, which is they're disaffected with the system. They feel that it's really not for them.
And
that, to me, is
we
really
know
the
that?
Message.
Sorry, and don't we know that in Hawaii, too?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, we'll see how this continues to move, but we'll have it for you on our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation. You can have a look at the video and at the Fox clip, too. That's going to do it for us for this week, but after the weekend, we'll be back with more conversation, and we'll be with you on Monday. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of things that we don't even have set yet, so I can't tell you.
Well, our friend, the irrepressible Dana Land, is coming in to give us a live preview of her Atherton concert.
And if you've ever wondered about the music you hear on the show, well, you can find our playlist. It's on hpr2.org, and that's also where you can listen back to today's show.
Our executive producer is Beth Ann Koslovich.
Lillian Zong produces the daily program. Taylor Rice is our production assistant, and Caitlin Ikuma does our research.
And the Backyard Quiz theme was written for us by John DeMello. I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. We'll see you on Monday and pick up the conversation. Have a great weekend.